From Centered, welcome to the Take Root podcast, where our purpose is to share testimonies that encourage you to deepen your roots of faith. Join host Karen Johnson to hear stories of those who have experienced God directing their own lives to a deeper, engaged faith.
Well, hello, friends. It is so fun to be with you again on this journey of listening to the stories that God has planted in the lives of his people. And today is just another great story we get to hear. And it's an honor to introduce you to Keith Carpenter, the lead pastor of Epic Life Church, whose vision is to see North Seattle transformed by experiencing the love of Christ. Located along the Aurora Avenue corridor, this church is caring for drug addicts, the homeless, those caught up in prostitution, and much more. Keith's leadership extends beyond Epic Life, as he also heads a network of 23 churches in North Seattle and is actively involved in the business community there. He led the initiative of Epic Life to start a for-profit coffee business, a food bank, and a nonprofit organization that leads the neighborhood in bringing life to this community. So this is someone who's truly living out his faith in a very real way. And I'm sure we're all going to be blessed today as we hear his story. So welcome, Keith. It's so good to have you with us today. Hi.
Fantastic to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You too. And I wish everybody could see you've got this great smile. I'm going to describe you a little bit. Eyes that light up when you talk about what you're talking about, and a cool beard and mustache. So cool little beret hat. Glasses. You guys get the picture? This is a great looking guy with a heart of gold, and you can see it in his smile and his eyes. So, Keith, I'm just going to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about you. Tell us your story, your life. Where do you live, and your family?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I think my life in Seattle is completely different than the life I thought I would lead, to tell you the truth. Mm. So I actually grew up in Idaho, central Idaho, in the wilderness. My backyard was a few million acres of national forest, and my parents kind of hacked a living out of the wilderness, literally. Wow. And so I grew up, you know, barefoot, and coming on the other side of the mountain was a little town. I knew God got a hold of my heart when I was young at a little Baptist church that was planted in the 70s. And when I was 7 years old, gave my life to Christ. And obviously he didn't transform me from my life of waywardness at 7 years old necessarily, but God put a spark in my heart. And then when I was 12, really called me to ministry. And throughout the years, school, college, went into business, went into medicine a little bit, chemistry, and then found myself volunteering for a college ministry in a little town in Minnesota after Christine and I got married. And that turned into what we're doing now. So, you know, 25 years later, I'm still a pastor, still in ministry, and God's called us into more and more. And it's just been exciting.
That's amazing.
Pretty amazing how he, you know, brings the people that he wants into ministry.
Yeah. And how he does it sometimes, because you and Christy have been married 32 years, did you say?
Correct.
Yeah. Four sons and a granddaughter.
That's right. Four sons and now a little girl that has us all wrapped around her fingers. Trying not to spoil her.
That's so fun. That's a good thing. So how were you and your wife called to Seattle? Cause you were in Minnesota, right?
That's correct. And the story is big. And I say big because it's God's story. It's miraculous. We don't really probably have time for the whole thing. I wish at some point, I started volunteering at a college ministry in Minnesota, and the ministry went from four students in over 10 years to about 400. And we were loving life and thought we were going to raise our kids in Minnesota, had our four boys, youngest one was three, thought that that's where we'd be the rest of our lives, and pretty happy with it, pretty comfortable, exciting ministry, going all over the world, seeing students come to Christ. And one day God put his hand on our shoulders and said, it's time to go. And there's a lot that was in that, but the short story is, God gave Christine and I both separate visions of 105th and Aurora in North Seattle.
Wow.
And told us to go start a church. And not knowing anything about Seattle, North Seattle, I had been here when I was young, but that's about it. But never in North Seattle, downtown, you know, Pike's Market, whatnot. And so we just took that that vision, those visions, the word Aurora, North Seattle, Aurora Avenue, and knew that we were supposed to come and plant a church someplace. And so we did. We ended up leaving everything behind, much to the chagrin of friends and family members and church leaders, and moved to Seattle, lived in a tent for about a month because we didn't have a place to live. That's another story that God miraculously gave us a house and provided a place for us to live. And then located the church and the area, the place on Aurora Avenue that we were supposed to be at, and really 105th and Aurora. So a lot of miracles happened in that time. I love to tell the story because it's like the story of God in our lives, and how fun is it to brag on what God's doing? So
yeah,
pretty exciting. And I like to tell it too, because it's, in my opinion, it's not something I would have chosen to do, but something that he did and is still doing.
Yeah. Wow. Would you want to tell us one of those stories from the beginning?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you the story, how we got to 105th and Aurora.
Yeah. And yeah.
We had just moved to the city, and like I said, we lived in a tent for a month because the house that we were going to buy fell through the day we were leaving Minnesota. And we drove out of Minnesota, and halfway across South Dakota, I remembered I had a friend in Gig Harbor. And so I called him up and said, hey, do you mind if we live with you? I had six other people, my family of six, and six others who were coming to help plant the church. And so we lived in a tent there, and coming up to Seattle looking for a house, finally found a house. We made an offer. This is 2008 summer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Many of your listeners will remember in 2008, the housing market was in trouble. Banks were closing, lots of problems. Yep. And I was going to the bank saying, so we're planting a church. My salary might be this at some point. I don't have a salary now. I'd like to buy a house. And somehow we made an offer on this house on Tuesday, and we had the keys in our hands on Thursday.
What?
Moving in.
So, oh my gosh. That's pretty crazy.
So we moved in, and the first Saturday of October, God woke me up at 3:30 in the morning. And we had been driving around North Seattle. Aurora Avenue is a very long street, actually Highway 99 connected Canada to Mexico at one point, and now in North Seattle, it was called Aurora Avenue. Mm-hmm. And we've been driving around asking God, where on Aurora do you want us to plant this church? And we'd seen this street in our visions and knew that God wanted us on Aurora, but didn't know exactly where. So at 3:30, the first Saturday in October there in 2008, just woke up and God said, get in your car and drive. So I'm like, okay. I got in my car. I told Christine goodbye and went out and got in my car. I drove up onto Aurora and headed south. And as I'm driving along Aurora, I'm just praying. I'm praying for Aurora, but more praying that God would show us and establish where we were to start this church. We had started it in our front, in our living room, but we knew that we were supposed to be on Aurora. So I'm driving along through 115th, going south, 110th, 105th, 100th. And I'm praying this prayer that I think God, it was kind of a God prayer that he was calling me to pray. I don't know how to describe that. Huh. And I'm praying, God, if this is where you want us to be, would you give us this land like you gave the children of Israel, the promised land? And we'll enter in, we'll kick the enemy out. I know it's going to be hard work, but we'll step in and claim the land for you.
Wow.
And I turned around on Winona Street, which incidentally, I think was named after Winona, Minnesota, the town we came from in Minnesota. I turned around on Winona Avenue, headed back north from 75th there. I'm driving back through this area. There's porn shops and strip clubs and homelessness and a lot of just nefarious business, I guess, on the street. Uh-huh. And yeah. I'm praying God, as Moses dropped the children of Israel off into the promised land, would you give us this land and we'll claim it as yours? We'll put a flag down. And could we minister in buildings we didn't build and pull from wells that we didn't dig? You know, would this be the promised land? We'll enter in, kick the enemy out. We know it will be hard. Mm-hmm. We'll do what you call us to do. And so around 150th, there's a restaurant called Sherry's. And that morning at 4 a.m., I drove into Sherry's restaurant. And in front of me, it was a blue four-door Corolla. Mm-hmm. And out of the front seat comes this young African gentleman. And I recognized him because he passed me at 105th in Aurora. And we walk into the restaurant together. And close enough that the host says, there's only two of us in the whole restaurant. It's 4 a.m. on a Saturday morning. The host says, two for breakfast this morning? And he says, no, just me. And God's spirit is like, no, you need to have breakfast with this guy this morning.
Wow.
God, I just came here to be alone, to drink some mediocre coffee and pray this promised land prayer about Moses, the children of Israel, and just praying that you would show us. We need to know where to start this church. I don't have time this morning for this other person. I got my own booth. And I'm sitting there, and shortly God is pressing on my heart, go have breakfast with this guy. I finally get up and I walk towards him and I walk past him. I go to the restroom. I'm sitting in the restroom looking in the mirror and it's like, God, I mean, I need to find out where the church is. I don't have time for humans right now. I need to find out where to plant the church. And God says, don't miss this opportunity this morning. You need to have breakfast with this man. And so I went out.
Those tears are real. They're for a reason. Yeah.
I walked up to him and I said, hey, do you mind if I have breakfast with you? And he goes, sure. And I reached down and I say, hey, my name's Keith. And he reaches up and he says, hey, my name's Moses. I'm like, are you Moses? I stuttered and kind of sat down. I was like, what? And he goes, oh, I'm Eritrean. And actually it's Musi, but in English, that means Moses.
Yes. Yes.
So from, I can't even tell you what your name means to me.
So he's Ethiopian.
Eritrean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And come to find out, he's a worship pastor from Eritrea, and he fled the country during the Civil War time with Ethiopia, Eritrea, moved to America, was delivering pizza late into the night, and happened to be the only person in Sherry's restaurant that morning.
And, oh my gosh!
I just sat down and said, "Your name means everything to me this morning." It's like God is placing His church at 105th in Aurora.
Wow.
And we're supposed to go in and claim the land, like the promised land. And and so we ate breakfast together. I can still introduce you to Moses 15 years later. He's part of a church community here in the city. And but we just took that as God saying 105th in Aurora, enter in, kick the enemy out, and I'll give you the land. And so I started to drive around.
Sorry. Wow. Yeah. No, don't apologize. It's making me cry too.
It's just the power. Well, God is good to know that He's called us here, because I wouldn't have picked 105th and Aurora. It's literally the worst spot on Aurora Avenue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I drove around there that weekend praying and came across this little church. We came across a movie theater and, decided, well, there's a movie theater here called the AMC at the Oak Tree Village. Let's start the church there.
Wow.
And right at 105th in Aurora, I drove around the corner and there's a little Baptist church with 12 people left in it. Old pastor, Pastor Ed. And he said, well, I tell you what, while you're planning on starting a church in this neighborhood, why don't you just start in our church building the evening on Sunday evening?
Wow. Wow.
And so because of their generosity, then we got to move in. Like the next week, we moved into the neighborhood in the evening and started ministering, started reaching out, asking God, to show us. We started praying over the nine businesses, the porn shops and strip clubs and palm reading and Quick Cash and and all these places, and praying that God would eliminate the bad business and bring good business in. We started to plan to open a church in the theater there that was very run down in the 80s. It was a really, really nice place. Where a lot of Seattleites went for movies. And by 2008, it was really, really run down. Well, we planned on opening kind of public, I guess, launching the church in 2009, October 4th of 2009. The month before we opened, the people at that little church came to us and said, you know what? We've been praying that God would bring his spirit to this community, and you guys are here. So here's the keys.
Oh my gosh.
Here's the property. It's yours. And they signed, you know, basically, they signed the deed over to us, signed the property over to us. We exchanged no money. And a year after that prayer, we're indeed ministering in a building we didn't build that God gave to us.
Oh my God. And this is such a cool story.
And it's so beautiful until he called us to this very, very difficult neighborhood. And we met in the theater for about 6 years and then moved into the building now that we're in here at 105th and Stone. So two blocks off of 105th and Aurora. And we just got to start sharing this building. Now there's five churches that meet in this building, for us and then four other language churches, Mongolian, Eritrean, Chukis, and Hispanic congregation. We started a food bank in the neighborhood here. It's the only food bank in our neighborhood. We started a kind of a neighborhood network, business and community network. Young woman, Casey Peer, who actually helped start the church in 2008. We started For North Seattle Together, which is a nonprofit organization bringing business owners and the community together, bringing the community together. And what we did, we looked at this community and realized that it was the edge of four different neighborhoods of Seattle, and Aurora Avenue being on the edge, like a forgotten edge zone, if you will. We discovered the homeless would call it the blade or the edge. And it was the street that was, that the city didn't know what to do with. The neighborhoods kept it on the edge. It wasn't in the middle of anything. And we took a map and we just felt like the Spirit was calling us to claim it differently. And you know how it's good when somebody knows our name?
Oh, well, yeah.
This area didn't have a name. Its name is terrible, is garbage, is dumpster fire, is where the prostitutes hang out, where the Johns are, where the pimps are, where the shootings are, and where the homeless are. And so we just took a map and drew a big goose egg around 105th and Aurora. And the name Nora came out, and it stands for North Aurora, but we just N-O-R-R-A, and through our network For North Seattle, we call this neighborhood Nora. And we were like, let's just create a new neighborhood with Aurora Avenue being in the center and give it an identity.
I love it.
And put Aurora, the worst, right in the heart so that we can focus on it. And it won't be on the edge where we forget about it.
Wow.
And so we did that and we call it Nora. We've had Nora parties here and community gatherings, the Oak Tree Village kind of parking lot. Then became our gathering place for the neighborhood. And so we threw parties and block parties and started praying over these buildings. And we started praying for good business to come in. And nobody wants to move into a neighborhood like this.
It's true.
It's going to take some guts. And so.
But you started a business there, right?
Well, yeah. We were like, what if the new business was us?
Yeah, there you go.
So we took
tell us about that.
Yeah, we took the people God brought and who helped us plant the church and kind of walk down this road, a guy named Jeff and Chuck and Justin Shaheen, and these guys and myself, and we started walking towards what a restaurant would look like, maybe a coffee shop. And Justin and myself were the The other two ended up moving away, which happens a lot in the city. Christians move out of the city. And I don't blame them. It's hard to live here. But Justin and I then moved and pushed and realized this opportunity of opening a coffee shop. The coffee shop that was here previously, I won't name the giant coffee shop that used to be here by name, but anyway, they left the community. And the reason is because they were overrun. They didn't know what to do with the homeless situation.
Yeah.
And so COVID hit. We had a coffee truck moving called Pilgrim Coffee House. And we have this great 1945 coffee truck, fantastic truck. It goes everywhere. Big story in that too. But COVID hit, and January of 2020, our church was growing, business was growing. January of 2020, everything shuts down. We lose all of our gigs for the mobile coffee truck. And over the next few years, we lose about 120 people from our church as they move out of the city.
Wow.
But we set the coffee truck up in the Oak Tree Village parking lot and asked permission to do that. And was like, you know what? Let's just bless the neighborhood, our neighborhood. And pretty much overnight, business doubled and then it tripled.
Wow.
People started using it as a place to walk their dog, get out of their house, breathe some fresh air.
Yeah.
And through COVID, we had this coffee shop thriving on the sidewalk.
Wow.
Looked over the shoulder at this empty space that this previous company left and started building a plan. And then a year later, February of 2021, right in the heart of COVID, we opened a coffee shop. And now we're about to celebrate 3 years already.
Wow.
And this coffee shop, Pilgrim Coffee House, it's a for-profit and it runs separately from the church. And, and it's a really beautiful space. Our goal was to be a generous expression to the neighborhood. It's people told us, you know, you're not going to make any money here. It's a bad place to open a coffee shop. Look at the neighborhood. Look what's there. And we're like, yes, we know that. But God has called us to see North Seattle transform by finding an epic life in Christ. And even though the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, we know that God has come to give an abundant life. And, and we are his plan. There is no plan B.
That's right.
You know, Corinthians 5:20 says that we are his ambassador. Like, he created us for this. Ephesians tells us that he created us and he set us apart with his Holy Spirit and made us his masterpiece so that we can do and carry out the good works he planned for us ahead of time. It's like we can't fail because he's already planned these things for us to do.
Yeah.
And for us to walk into them with confidence is where we should be as Christians. And so
that's
many
right.
Christians are so afraid to risk.
So true. And that verse goes on to say, not just ambassadors, but ambassadors of reconciliation.
Yes.
Which is exactly what you guys are doing. Reconciling.
Yep. Renewal, right?
Renewal.
Something new. Yeah.
Wow.
Creating something beautiful out of what could be, what is darkness, bringing light to the darkness. And so, wow. And this coffee shop has become a hub, and
it is
like the hub of the Nora neighborhood.
Wow.
Our main coffee roast, espresso roast, is called Nora as well.
Oh, and that's perfect.
Yeah. It's really exciting. And so there's a whole story with the coffee shop now, and then with all the community stuff and how we're getting to minister with the coffee shop in a beautiful, beautiful way around the world.
Tell us a little bit about that, because you go to Nicaragua, don't you, to source some coffee, and tell us about how that's ministering to the neighborhood and even the homeless. Give us a little bit about that.
Sure, for sure. And so, yeah, I think, you know, this is Seattle. So when they find out Pilgrim is related to a church, they have this kind of reaction to it, right? And this is bad, we can't support this, and blah, blah, blah. So we were like, you know what we need to do is make sure this is the best coffee in the city. Like, this is the best coffee shop experience that somebody can experience.
I love that.
This kind of idea of being a generous expression to the neighborhood has come out, and we're Christ followers. So everywhere we are, we're being a generous expression of Christ. Right.
That's ambassador, so beautiful.
Christ, waving his flag wherever
so
we are.
So beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. And so here we are with a coffee shop wanting to create really good coffee and a really good experience. And so training our baristas, Justin has been fantastic about roasting a coffee that we really like, that he and I really like. And we don't care what the roasting profiles of the famous people are. We don't really care. What we care about is coffee we really like.
There you go.
And offering that to our neighborhood, a neighborhood that most people would say doesn't deserve it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's us, right? We don't deserve the generosity of Christ at all. In fact, we were enemies of his kingdom, and he still came for us.
Grace upon grace.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we go to, our goal is at some point is to only have coffee in the shop that's sourced from farms that we've put our feet on. So we haven't got to all the farms, but we are in Nicaragua now on some farms there. We have pictures of these farmers on the wall. We've picked some of their beans. We've been in the harvest process and seen this whole process, and now bring these hand-picked coffee.
And it's a beautiful process, isn't it?
I've gotten
to see some of that in Guatemala, and it's
fantastic.
It's so
our
cool.
Our new Christmas tide is Guatemalan, and it's one of my, might be my favorite coffee right now. It's fantastic, the Christmas tide. But yeah, it's an amazing process, isn't it? And this is coffee, and people complain, wow, your coffee's so expensive. I'm like, people hand-pick this.
Yeah.
Like one bean at a time. It's not like going down the limb and, you know, just scraping all of them up. One ripe bean at a time. They're not getting the unripe ones. They're not getting the overripe ones. One ripe bean at a time, handpicked with fingers and families on these mountains at 5,000 feet with bags slung over their shoulders, carrying coffee beans.
And then they dry them out on these big cement things that they built.
There's a whole process of getting the cherry off and drying them. And before they even get into our country as a green bean, there's so much that goes into it. When we finally get it at our roaster and a big 150-pound bag of green bean, there's so much that has gone into it. And we drink coffee like, big deal. I'm going to complain if it's over $3. it's a remarkable commodity, to tell you the truth, worldwide. And there's so much. And so our goal is to bring coffee from farmers that we know. We know these guys by name, right? And we're offering this to our neighborhood and connecting those worlds together.
That's so beautiful.
Giving the farmers more money because there's less in between people. Yeah. It's so fun. And we hope to take customers from our shop now to these farms as well.
Wow.
Some of these farmers are Christians, some of them aren't, but just going to be that revolving around to see everything happening and understand and how beautiful it would to have our customers now enjoy their coffee more because they really understand it. So we get some coffee out of Burundi, friends of ours who are on the ground there in the part of Africa, some of the best coffee on earth coming out of Burundi and the co-ops that they make, a war-torn country. Coffee co-ops have saved so many lives and been so amazing. Long Miles Coffee is the coffee there. Guatemala, Nicaragua, Peru. We're heading to Peru soon as well. Ecuador. Anyway, it's pretty exciting.
Okay, so now I'm curious. I have a question. I'm thinking about your coffee shop, Pilgrim Coffee.
Pilgrim Coffee House.
Coffee House. Pilgrim.
Yeah, it's not Pilgrims. Or the Pilgrims or anything like that. It's
Pilgrim. Pilgrim Coffee House. Got it. And I'm picturing the neighborhood you're in and the other coffee shop unnamed that had too much problems with the homelessness. How do you interact with the homeless through the coffee shop? And what does that look like? What and the population around there?
Yeah, that's a great question, Karen. And we've been asked that a whole bunch. So what we did, I'd love to even host you at the coffee shop so you can see what I'm talking about. But we created a space that the baristas are part of the community. And so it's not, you know, nothing against other coffee shops, but we didn't want this big coffee counter with big espresso machine. And then you kind of look around the corner and order through this hole and you're ordering through the, and talking to these people on the other side of something that's over there, right? And so Pilgrim is designed so that the countertop is very flat. There's very little on it. Our espresso machine actually is mounted underneath the bar with the ports, the ports coming up. So very little on the bar. And then our baristas have, it's wide open on the side as well. There's no barriers, no doors. They can just walk around it at any point. And so our baristas, and we make our own food as well. So in the kitchen, we have a small menu and they're making food back there. You can see it all. The kitchen barista bar is part of the coffee shop, really, in a lot of ways. And so our baristas actually bring coffee out to our customers and clean up their plates and give water as well. And we're not just yelling it from the bar, unless it's really, really busy, of course. But yeah, we're like serving people again, generous expression, right? And then with the homeless, then who are obviously in our neighborhood, and what we needed to do is figure out how to mitigate the restroom issue, which the walk in, head right to the restroom, and be in there maybe for an hour, maybe overdose and die. Or we have to break the door down to get in, or perhaps they're using, and now we have a coffee shop full of kids and families, and these kids are using the restroom next. And so, so it's not as much of having the homeless in the coffee shop itself, but how to mitigate the restroom issue. And so we've just held a hard line, and some people don't like this, but it's actually really worked. And we told everybody to use the restroom. You have to be a customer, and that can be a $1 customer, and sometimes we'll help with that $1 as well. But we don't let anybody, like anybody, just walk in and use the restroom. And so at first that's come with some backlash of us people thinking we're not kind or polite. But what it's done actually is the homeless community now knows, and they don't even try to walk in without coming to the counter and maybe buying a glass of water, if that, right? Yeah, and then it becomes this mutual space that they recognize that if it's used in such a way that we don't have customers in the shop, we close down as a shop and there's no restroom available at all. And so there's this mutual agreement. And so also we have a food bank nearby that we know a lot of these people from the street, and our church as well. For years, people who are attending our church wake up on the doorstep often, or down the alley. And so they're worshiping with people who are working in Microsoft or something like that, and a very diverse small church. And so since we're so in the community, we're out on the street, we're ministering to the neighborhood, the people of the street. Many of our homeless, there's a whole different conversation on the homeless industrial complex of the city and how we're engaged in that space. But in the coffee shop, it's become this really, you can kind of call it a dance, I guess, in a way. And honestly, the people of the neighborhood get it as well. And when they see us interact with the people who maybe have no house, have no place to live, or need a bath, they see us acting generous and great kindness. And
That's good. That's beautiful. I'd love to hear a few stories. Your church has been there since 2009.
Yes.
What changes have you seen? Like, you've created a beautiful business. There are those other businesses that you have been praying over. And, you know, are there stories of women coming out of prostitution or drug addicts coming?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The conversation is very deep and has a lot of nuances to it, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
So often when we talk about these things, just having a quick conversation doesn't allow the nuances. And so people take kind of sometimes what I say wrong. What I always lead with and make sure people know is that we love no matter what. We're kind and generous and welcoming no matter what. Sometimes kind and generous and welcoming no matter what also has to do, has boundaries associated with it.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. If you've had kids, you realize, right, boundaries mm-hmm. help them become like great people.
Yeah.
Fantastic people. And, yeah. and so we've, the nine businesses that we were praying over, there's only one.
Wow.
The seedy strip club that's left. We roast coffee in what used to be a pawn shop.
Wow.
Themed and become our roasting facility.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool. There's other things happening now. COVID brought about 170 women to the street. That's 170. 170.
Oh.
And for the last few years, it's an unbelievable. That some of your listeners might know that if they've driven up and down Aurora Avenue, it's been really, really hard to see. And our city attorney office helped shut down a couple of the motels that were the worst offenders. Mm-hmm. And it took about, there's only about 30 women left on the street now. It was, and it's still pretty bad. There's different ministries that we work with, mm-hmm. Rest and Light of Love and a strip church. And we work with them. They work out of our coffee shop as well and with their church up and down the street. And the fact is that nobody's figured out the prostitution piece. And the amount of women who've come out, there are stories, but it's very few.
Yeah.
And then with the homeless, Karen, I can tell you story after story of men and women that have been part of our family. And the last time we see them is in a body bag or in the alley, face down, alone and dead, overdosed or because of the cold nights. I don't even know. Christine and I from Minnesota dropped into this place. Sometimes I ask God through just weeping that I just ask him to help because I can't do anything. And the city, without getting too political, loves to throw money at things and it's killing people. And so yes, there's I'm not a home first advocate, because I live in the middle of this, we're ministering inside of this. And so, yes, they're not overdosing and killing themselves on the street, but they're overdosing and killing themselves in a 10 by 10 apartment in a building because now they can do whatever they want, whenever they want. And there's very few boundaries. And so, I just would love to see more opportunity for spiritual involvement in these properties, and they're not, sadly. So there's a lot in that. There's so much reasons there's homelessness, and Union Gospel Mission does a fantastic job of teaching about the broken relationships that are in there. And so as a church, we reach, we care, and there's many that come in and out of the church, and we just try our best to really care for them and get them to
that's what you can do. And then you're partnering with others and inviting them into your space, and so you're doing a lot. That's a lot.
There has to be a big partnership. This is the only way it can work. But I believe, Karen, without getting too far into it, I think the 105th and Aurora is the epicenter of great change on Aurora Avenue. And I believe that somehow God has brought us here and kept us here to see a just incredible change. And I think it's going to start at 105th and Aurora. And it's really beautiful what's kind of happening behind the scenes and what God is doing and the hearts that he's stirring.
That is so exciting. I just listen to your story and I get chills and I get emotional. And I think of the sacrifice that you guys have made and bringing your little kids and raise them basically on Aurora Avenue, right? And in that,
they've seen a lot.
And that's just a huge faithfulness that you guys have walked, and thank you for that. You've got to be learning. Oh, wow. You must have been learning and learning so much along this road. What's God teaching you personally right now?
That's really good. Recently, well, I paused because there's a lot. We've seen a lot of churches come and go over the years, and I want to be really careful. I'm not disparaging pastors who have started churches and then have closed them down or left, and I don't want to disparage them at all. It's very, very hard here. It's not planting a church in the South, perhaps, but it's very hard. I've seen probably 30 churches start and close in the last 15 years in the city of Seattle.
Wow.
I believe, I haven't substantiated this completely, but I believe 70% of the Christians of Seattle left the city over COVID. They left to different places where they could raise kids. And so
that's a big number.
It's a huge number. And yeah. I take that from the North Seattle Pastors United, that we have 23 churches that all of them lost very large groups of people who have moved away. And we're rebuilding, and it's beautiful. But there are a lot of Christian men and women who had resources and could help and could be part of, have left the city. So I've learned, I think God has taught me a lot of grit. If there's anything I've learned through the years, is that we there's a story in 1 Samuel 14, and it's when Jonathan takes his armor bearer, and the Israelite army has two swords among them. Jonathan has one, and King Saul has the other one, and 600 men against a sea of the enemy. Right? They had 1,000 charioteers and all kinds of foot soldiers. And so there's no way this army of Israelite was going to win. And Jonathan takes his armor bearer and said, you know what, let's go up there and let's see if God will go before us, whether with a lot or with a little, God can win the war. And so he basically says, let's just see if God will do this with us. That's his plan. The whole plan was Let's go do something, right? And it's this idea of risk. Christians don't risk anything. We are a complacent people. Recently, just this Sunday, we had a young woman who was baptized, and she'd been Christian for a long time. She said something to the effect that the salvation that I've experienced from Christ is worth more than my complacency. And as Christians, we are so complacent. And in this city, there's a lot of money and a lot of entertainment, and we're so complacent. And I just, God has pushed Christine and I to risk more and more every single year, and to push closer and closer to a faith limit, if there is one, right? Mm-hmm. As Christians, we talk about faith, but seldom do we step into a place where the miraculous is needed. We stay on this side of the cliff. We can kind of mitigate it all ourselves. We can take care of things. Faith isn't needed, and neither is the miraculous. The miraculous lies on the other side of that cliff of fear, right? When we're stepping into the unknown, we don't know what's there. That requires faith. An untested faith is not faith. It's just a good idea. And so we need to, that's what he's taught me over and over and over, that our faith has to be tested. And then it is actually faith, and it's tested in where we need the miraculous. And so I think God has taught us to continue moving into that, to risk more. And he's always filled in the holes and done what. And I know people are like, wait, you need to have a plan. You need to be wise. You need to count your money, everything. And like, yes, but we also as a church need to do something.
Yeah.
The city can't figure out what to do on the street. They don't know what to do with 105th Aurora. Our mayor does not know what to do. And I don't blame him necessarily, but the church can do something.
Yeah.
And if the resources came together, we could transform a corner of the city and become the brightest light in the Northwest. And in the darkest spot, right? The light shines brightest in the darkest.
Yeah.
And so we're pushing into that, asking God to show us more what to step into next.
Mm.
The right thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, this might just lead right into the next question, or you might, it might connect or not, but if there's one last thing you could leave us with, a word of encouragement or challenge, or we work with the next generation, building up the next generation of Jesus-centered leaders. And what advice would you have for the generations below you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say, it's fun to live in this world. There's lots of things to do. Seattle is an amazing place to live. Amazing place. But there is so much excitement in telling God's story.
Yeah.
That goes so much farther than the story that we create on our own. And when we get to tell God's story, there's a new passion and hope that comes out that makes everything else look cheap. So this is Christmas season, and there's a story written by Charles Dickens, right? The Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite parts of that book is the ghost of Christmas present comes. And it's this big king. He's on lavish mounds of food and wealth and riches. And he goes around and he shows Scrooge these different places and abject poverty. People are saying Merry Christmas. And Christmas becomes this light time when people are celebrating. He goes to the wealthy and there's Merry Christmas, and takes them even out into the sea where there's fishermen or the coal mine, and people are singing carols, and there's a Christmas spirit, and it's just lavished and all just so beautiful and so wonderful. And you feel like that the scene is going to end, or the chapter is going to end, with the ghost of Christmas present saying how wonderful and beautiful Christmas is always. There's just joy and wonder and excitement. But right at the end, I don't know if you remember this, right at the end, he opens up, right at the end of this chapter, he opens up his gown, his cloak. And there are two emaciated animal-looking children, a boy and a girl. And they just look awful, like skin and bones and discolored and crooked fingers and faces. And the boy... His name is Ignorance, and the girl's name is Want. And the ghost of Christmas present said to Scrooge, "Be aware of Ignorance and Want in this beautiful world that you live in. Especially be aware of Ignorance, because on his face, on his forehead, is written the word doom." And it's really this idea that Dickens was trying to get across, I think, anyway, that the wealth of everything, we can purposefully, as Christian leaders and business leaders, we can purposefully be ignorant to the problems, the deep problems. And we work here in this place that it's hard for us to be ignorant because we're here. But there's so many places where Christians can move and just be ignorant. And choose ignorance. And ignorance isn't necessarily a sin. It's just out of sight, out of mind. I don't know about it. I haven't seen it. Boy, when you drive down Aurora and you see 100 women without clothes on walking down the street, it's hard to be ignorant about it.
Yeah.
We have in my office, I'm sitting in my office right now, and I've had women of the street walk down the street to this door with nothing on because they've been used all night long. I've had them dumped out at the back door here. I've had our homeless people die on our step. Down the street, there's shootings at the bus stop. And it's hard to be ignorant when you're in it, but it's easy to be ignorant when we're on the edge someplace else. And so my encouragement to young men and women is to risk by getting involved, by knowing, by not being ignorant, and willfully choosing. And of course comes with that is the want, and greed is something that we wrestle with as Christians as well. So
sure, anyway, sure.
I guess that would be it. Yeah.
But then they step into where you need the miraculous again, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And where faith grows and where trust grows.
Yeah.
Because you have to. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. That's beautiful. Well, wow. So you've shared so much. What a beautiful story. And Epic Church, Epic Life Church meets at what time if somebody wants to come?
Yeah, we're at the corner of 105th and Stone Avenue. And so we meet at 9:30 in the morning.
9:30 in the morning, 105th and Stone Avenue.
Yeah. Epic Life Church. It comes after John 10:10. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come to give you life. Not just any life, but an abundant life.
Abundant life.
More life than we could imagine.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And Pilgrim Coffee House.
Yes, ma'am.
is at?
That's at the Oak Tree Village. So 100th and Aurora.
100th and Aurora.
Yeah.
So if you want to go taste the best coffee in Seattle, there's
it really is.
Well, I want to come.
You know, we were just awarded King Five's local coffee shop of the Northwest.
Really? Congratulations. Yeah. Oh, that wow. Cool. That's so cool. Our
Christmastide is just a fantastic coffee right now. It's
so nice.
That's
awesome. Well, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today and sharing. I can tell this is just a minuscule portion of your story, but wonderful, heartfelt, really miraculous story. So thank you. It is so encouraging and inspiring as we listen. Thank you. So thanks again, Keith. God bless you. God bless your family and your ministry and, God bless Nora.
And thank you so much. And there are so many people. I'm just such a small part in all the people involved in this.
Yeah, yeah. You've got a whole family out there doing it. Well, God bless you all. Okay. Thanks. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. And bye-bye, friends.
Thank you for listening to the Take Root podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and share. To learn more about Centered and hear more stories of discovery and growth in Jesus, visit us at centered.org.